All right, good morning, everyone. Today's daf is Tezayin. Half the daf is dedicated today to Psula Hamukdashim, from remnants from yesterday's daf, yep, pun intended. So, the other half of today's daf is going to be a business venture. Okay. Talk a little bit about structuring a business, little venture capital. Okay, but first comes first, the second part of yesterday's daf. Psula Mugdashim. Really, Psula Mugdashim started already on Yadalid. The Mishnah Yadalid gave us some basic rules regarding an animal that was Mukdash, that was sanctified. It was Tamim, so that means that it immediately ascended to Kedusha Saguf. It has intrinsic Kedusha, and then it develops a blemish. And what do we learn? That you redeem it, but even after you redeem it, it has some residual Kedusha. And as a consequence of that, the only thing you can do is you can eat it. You can eat it wherever you want. You can eat it in a state of Tumah. But that's all you could do with it. You can't do anything else with it. You can't shear the animal, assuming there's something to shear. You can't work the animal. You can't milk the animal. You can't make babies. Right? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. The only thing you could do is just simply eat the animal. The pasuk says v'zavachta, and then you shecht it and you eat it, and that's it. Right? I'm sorry. Tizbach is the pasuk. Tizbach v'achalta. Right, so that's it. You can just shecht it, you can eat it, and that's it. And there's nothing else that you could do with it. Good. So this is that's the basic discussion that we've been having now for the past couple of days. If you take a look, well, the Gemara doesn't give a time in terms of when you have to eat it, but the Gemara makes a number of rabbinic legislation so that you don't keep the animal around. You really don't want to keep the animal around, because you keep the animal around, you're going to want to milk it, you're going to want to work it. So yeah, the Chachamim basically would say to you, and there's legislation that supports this, that you really got to eat it right away, as soon as possible. I'd like to do it now is I'd like to go a little bit back and just start again at the Braisa. I know we did it yesterday, but it segues into the rest of today's daf. It really sets us up. So let's turn back just a little bit. Tanya Kavasa to Rav Sheshes. We have a Braisa that supports Rav Sheshes. Let me give even one more, let's take even one more step back. Let me just give a little bit of background. We were talking about the offspring of Psula HaMukdasha, right? This animal that now has become disqualified and consequently redeemed. So what if it produces an offspring? So what if it does produce an offspring? So we basically gave it three different scenarios. Scenario number one, that after you redeem it, it then conceives and gives birth to a child. That child is fine. Mm-hmm. Scenario number two, it conceives while it was sanctified, and then, right, before Pidyon, before you redeemed it, and then it gives birth after you redeem it. Okay, that's usur. That's going to be a problem. That's prohibited. And finally, scenario number three is that it both conceived and gave birth to a child before Pidyon, so then that which comes out, it has kedusha, has sanctity. What exactly do you do in that third scenario? So you remember yesterday's daf, subject to a debate. One position in the Gemara did not give names. One position in the Gemara is that you offer it as a karban. Another position in the Gemara is that you have to let it develop a blemish and then redeem it. Okay. Really, our focus is going to be mostly on scenario number two, where it conceived before it was redeemed and it gave birth after it was redeemed. Because you see over there, it's complicated. Because the kedusha of such an animal, it's a weak kedusha. Meaning, because when it gave birth, the mother wasn't even kaddish anymore. Okay, so it's a really weak kedusha. So it's that second scenario where we spent a lot of time discussing, and we're going to be discussing it again today. Okay, so keep all that in mind. Oh, and finally, one other thing I just want to mention from yesterday. So in such a scenario, essentially, when the baby comes out, there's nothing you can do with that baby. Again, that second scenario, where it was conceived before you redeemed it, and it gave birth after you redeemed it. Right? The kedusha, it's not strong enough where you could redeem it. It's not weak enough where you could just let it go. So, remember Rav Huna said yesterday, konsan lekipa vehein mason. Basically, just put it away and let the animal die. Okay? Was there a solution? So Rav Sheshes gave a solution. And Rav Sheshes says, yeah, right before you redeem the mother. So in other words, the mother now has kedusha saguf. You point to the fetus inside and you say, I'd like to be makdish that fetus. For which carbon? So the Gemara says the same carbon as the mother. I'd like to be makdish that fetus. And Rav Sheshe says that would be a solution to a problem. Then you redeem the mother. Then the baby comes out, but the baby still has now kedushas. Kedushas aguf.
What color is the mother?
Hmm?
Whatever it was.
If the mother was...
In
other words, a chatas. Right? Right. Don't worry, mom can't be an ola. Ola comes from male animals.
Right.
Could be a chatas, and under which... That wouldn't work. That scenario would not work.
Yeah, so he's got a limited solution.
Okay. It is a limited solution. Tanya Kavasa, Rav Sheshe. So let's go over now at a braisa, which is supportive to what Rav Sheshe taught us. Okay, and so we're taking one step backwards. We're back on Test Vav Amud Beis, and it's about 10 lines from the bottom of the Amud. And the first word in the line is Kavase. We have a braisa that supports Rav Sheshes. And the braisa goes like this. If it first had a blemish, and then I sanctified it, which means it only has Kedushas Damim, it only has value Kedusha, v'niftu, and then you redeem it. So chayavim bebechor v'matan. The basic point, it's a regular animal. Nothing happened. Meaning, because the only Kedusha that it had was Kedushas Damim. So, Chayav Mebechor Matanus, it's obligated in Bechor and Matanus. Bein Lefnei Pijonim, Bein Lacher Pijonim, it does not matter before or after you redeem it. Hagos V'Ha'ovid Bahem, Eino Sofeg Es Ha'arba'im. If you shear the animal, if you work the animal, you're not going to get Malkus, because again, right, Bein Lefnei Pijonim, Bein Lacher Pijonim, Eino Sin Temura. It can't affect Temura, of course, because it's not a carbon. V'Lefnei Pijonim Mo'alin Bahen. Before your podeh, there's a nisr me'ila. Again, of course, because before your podeh, it's kedushas bedek habayis. It belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. You can't get benefit from anything of the Beis HaMikdash. La'achar pijonam min mo'alam behem. After you redeem it, there's no isr of me'ila, of course, because you redeemed it. V'lado seyem chol v'niftin tamimim. What about its offspring? So its offspring has no kedusha. And niftin tamimim. And you could be podeh even if it comes out as a perfect unblemished offspring, because mom did not have kedushas aguf, so offspring's not going to have kedushas aguf as well. Finally, number six, umatfis on the chosevach shiurtsa. Once, if you want to be makdish this animal, whatever you want, you can be makdish for whatever carbon you'd like, because it really is nothing. It's chulin.
This is a general rule for all damim.
Yes, klalu shol davar harei hein kachulin chol divrehem, and as a general rule, it's chulin. The only thing you have to do with such an animal, of course, is redeem it, because it only has kedushas damim. Aval. Okay, that's all side A. Okay, where it had a mum kavur before you were makdish it, it only has kedushas damim. Next part of the braisa. Okay, we went over six halachas of kedushas damim. We're going to go over those same six halachas of kedushas aguf, but obviously it's going to be radically different. But what if it has kedushas aguf? I sanctify the animal while it was unblemished, and then it develops a blemish, and then I redeem it. So now it has kedushas aguf, but now it was redeemed, and it was residual kedusha, classically known as psule hamukdashin. So number one, peturim and bechorim and matanos, it's not obligated in bechorim matanos. Reason being, going back to yesterday's daf, the Torah, it compares it to tzviva ayal. It's like the deer in the heart, just like the deer in the heart exempt from bechora and matanos, so to this one as well. Number two, bein lefnei pijonam, bein lacher pijonam, hagozes va'ovid behem sofek zarbaim. You cannot shear the animal, you cannot work the animal, even after you redeem it. Psula hamukdashin. Number three, uvein lefnei pijonam, uvein lacher pijonam, osin tamura. It can affect tamura. Now here's the neat part. Okay, I don't know if you want to say neat. Maybe that's not the right adjective. But here's the neat part. It can affect tamura even after you redeemed it. That's weird. Right? Because before you redeemed it, it has kedushas aguf. Even after you redeemed
it. Why would you want to have a tamura?
You wouldn't want to do it.
So what's the point?
Even before you
just redeemed it, you said that before, this is not a korban, I'm redeeming it.
So correct. Understood. Well, let's start off like this. Even before you redeem it, you don't want to make tamura. You never want to make tamura. But the point is that even after you redeemed it, it's a quasi korban.
Right.
It's the funniest korban in the world. It retains original kedusha value. Now you can eat it wherever you want. You don't have to eat in Yerushalayim, and you don't even have to eat in a state of tahara. It is a weird carbon. It's a shade of a carbon. But if it's enough of a carbon that it can affect tamura, Again, you spend a moment thinking about it. It's amazing. Really is amazing. Well, if nei pijonam mo'alam behem, lacha pijonam ein mo'alam behem. Now, before your poda, there's an iser of me'ilam. Right, because it's a carbon. After your poda, there's no iser of me'ilam. Right.
Is the case that animal became defective after?
It became defective after your maktish.
But is eating considered me'ilam? That's only you do it anyway.
Right, so no, there is no Isser of Me'ilah. That's exactly the point. There is no Isser of Me'ilah.
No, but I'm saying in terms of what kind of you can only eat it, right? Is eating considered Me'ilah? Because you cannot put it to work.
Right.
You cannot.
Yes, but eating,
right?
Yes, eating would be Me'ilah. Me'ilah is any benefit. Vlado same kodesh ve'ein niftin tamimin. Now, the whole reason why we brought in this braisa is for this reason over here. Number five and number six. Vlado same kodesh. The offspring have Kedusha and a Niftin Tamimim. And you cannot redeem them. You cannot redeem them while they are unblemished. Okay. Gemara is going to spend a moment on that in just a second. Ein matfisin l'chol zevach shiyirtzeh. And also, if you want to dedicate the offspring as a carbon, you can't choose which carbon it's going to be, but only that which its mother is. The reason why the Braisa comes up now, the reason why we went through all 12 points of this braisa, 6 on Kedusha Zamim, 6 on Kedusha Zaguf, is for this one line right over here. Because that's exactly what Rav Sheshet says. Rav Sheshet says that if you want to, before you redeem it, point to the offspring and say, I'd like this offspring to be a carbon, you may do that. Right? That was his solution in terms of, quote-unquote, saving the offspring. But what carbon can you make it? Only what its mother is. Because the mother has Kedusha Zaguf. So the offspring can only be given same Kedusha Zaguf. It's basically a carbon. That's not the language. It's sanctified. Even after you redeem it, the only thing you could do is you can eat it. Okay, period.
This is the only part that's different from the Mishnah, the Braisa, everything else in the Braisa.
Yeah, in other words, this Braisa almost copies the Mishnah.
Right.
Couple of extra points, though. This right, that number six.
Number
six is not mentioned in the Mishnah. Agreed. Klal shel davar hadereisha l'asui shachtem mechutz tepater. Okay, the klal shel davar of the reisha, meaning, you know how this works? Anytime you have a braisa or a Mishnah ending with the words klal shel davar, the Gemara assumes that it's not just a summary statement. The Gemara is alluding to another halacha. So the klal shel davar of the reisha is coming to include shachtem mechutz, meaning if I have something that only has kedushas damim, and I shecht it outside the Beis HaMikdash, that's not shchutei chutz, it's not a karban. So therefore, you're going to be exempt. Kol shel davar is safe. By the way, you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't do it. It has kedusha. It has sanctity. Kedusha is better kabayis. It has value. More value alive than dead. So it's not yours. You shouldn't do it, but you're not going to violate the iser of shchutei chutz. Kol shel davar is safe. What about the summary statement of the second half of the braisa? The one where it's talking about psula mukdash l'asuye chalbo. Chalbo. Right? The milk. No milk. Milk is a byproduct. The only thing you could do is eat the animal itself. No byproducts. No shearing. No working. No milk. Amar mar. Okay, good. Today's daf. We start now. Ein niftin tamimim ve'ein matfis.
So sorry.
Yes, okay.
But the offspring could be offered as a korban, just the same as the mother.
What, in the second half?
Yeah.
In the second half.
If you're after it was unconsecrated.
Correct. But you have to you have to dedicate that offspring as a carbon.
Otherwise, the animal has just been left.
Correct. Now, Amar Mar, we go back to a statement made in the Braisa.
Oh, sorry, that was accepted, though?
Everything here is very cut and dry. Ein niftin tamimim ve'ein matfisin l'chol zevach sheyirtzeh. You can't redeem it while it is unblemished, and you can't dedicate it as any carbon you want. Okay, now the Gemara is going to make a very simple diuk. Tamimim hu delo mifrake. As long as it's unblemished, you cannot redeem it. Habale mom mifrake. But once it develops a blemish, so now you can redeem it. Lechol. I know. It's, there's a lot of information over here. We're talking about the second half of the Braisa. We're talking about where it's psule hamukdashin. We're talking about the offspring of Psula Megdashim.
But the offspring is inside the mother's womb.
Correct.
Okay, so, and if it's Tamimim, how do you know if it's Tamim or not?
meaning we're talking about the offspring after it's born. After the offspring comes out of the animal.
Oh, okay. Oh, so first you have to designate it as a korban.
That's what you should do. In other words,
because don't we have to starve it to death?
The Gemara is going to ask exactly that question.
Oh, that's why.
Because what the Gemara is now going to do is it's going to quote it, make a diuk, and then the Gemara is going to say, "Well, what did we learn yesterday by Ravuna? Ravuna said that you got to let it die."
Okay.
So tamimim hudalom mifrike habalimum mifrike lechol mashi yirtze hu dein matfisin haloso zevach matfisin heich mishkach halad matfisin loso zevach v'niftim b'mumin. That would indicate that once it develops a blemish, you can redeem it. So the Gemara says, what? Name it to have it to you after the Ravuna. We'll go back to what we learned yesterday. Ravuna says that if you have such animal that was conceived before you were poda it, and then you redeemed it, but still has residual kedusha, and the baby comes out. Rav Huna says there's nothing you could do with that baby. That baby does not have enough kedusha to be brought as a karban, and the baby does not have enough kedusha where you could redeem it. So Rav Huna says your only solution is going to be let it die. Kotzon l'kipa umesa. So the Gemara says, but from the Braisa, it sounds that that's not true. It sounds like from the Braisa, Braisa says you can't redeem it while it's unblemished. It sounds like from the Braisa that once it develops a blemish, now you can redeem it. So to Yufta the Rav Huna, it is difficult on Rav Huna. I'm lecha Rav Huna. Rav Huna's answer is very simple. Hu adin da'afilo bale mumim ein niftin. No, don't be medayik from the Braisa. Don't read the Braisa here so carefully. Why not? I did this generation niftin tamimim tananami sefe ein niftin tamimi. Symmetry of the Braisa. The first part of the Braisa says that you can be podet even if it's unblemished, because the first part of the Braisa was talking about kedushas damim. Good. So then the second half of the Braisa just copies that language. Remember, all of them were committed to memory. So we want that symmetry. It's like poetry. But don't read the second half so carefully. And the same thing with the comment of l'chol zevach shiyurtza, just for the purposes of symmetry. It means even if it's not tamim, you can't be podet. Because of Rav Huna. Rav Huna says that there's nothing you could do with this animal.
Ein niftin
tamimi means really ein niftin, period. Period. Even with a blemish, you can't be podet. Okay. Hashochtan bechutz pater. Now, if you shechta bechutz outside, you will be pater. Rav Huna masni chayev. Now, Rav Huna says that if you have such an animal, it has a blemish on it, so Rav Huna says, and you shecht it outside, you're going to be chayav. Mokim la. Now, wait a second. That can't be. You have an animal with a blemish on it, and you shecht it outside the Beit HaMikdash.
Has it been redeemed already? No.
Let's assume it has not been redeemed. Okay, and you shecht it outside the Beit HaMikdash, you're not going to be chayav on Shechut Echutz. Remember, one of the basic rules of Shechut Echutz is that you're only liable if this animal were fit to have been brought in the Beit HaMikdash. Right, Rashi quotes the Drasha. It's a Gemara in Zvachim. We learned it together. So how can Rav Huna maintain that you're going to be chayv? Meaning that was his Braisa. The way he learned it is that you're going to be chayv. So the Gemara says it is a very mild blemish. What the Gemara refers to as Dukin Sheba'ayin. Dukin Sheba'ayin, we translate as a cataract. Who knows if that's right? But in other words, it's such a mild blemish. Rabbi Kiva says the Mizbeach can tolerate it. Meaning, if it has such a blemish, really, l'chaschila, even if you asked Rabbi Akiva, he would tell you, don't bring it as a karban, it's got a blemish, it's got a mum. But if you shecht it, and you sprinkle the blood, and you put it up onto the Mizbeach is makabel. The Mizbeach tolerates it. Right? We learned this back in Zvachim. And so that is how you're going to explain Rav Huna, where if you take such an animal and shecht it outside the Beis HaMikdash, you're going to be liable on Shechut Echutz. Why? Since the Mizbeach can tolerate it inside, therefore you're liable for it outside. You want to read an interesting Rashi. Rashi over here goes through what the actual etymology of Dukin Sheba'ayin means. Rashi... Rashi, the first pshat is the one we're used to and familiar with. Some sort of cloudiness of the eye, cataract of the eye. Rashi then goes on to describe how basically the eye is. He quotes a medrash. The eye is like the earth, the planet. The upper eyelid is like the sky. The lower eyelid is like the ground. But then I lose him. The white of the eye is the ocean. The black of the eye is the sun.
Follows the course of the sun.
Anyway, it's a beautiful medrash. I kind of lose him with the
dry land.
The dry land. The dry land is the bottom part of the eye, and this part of the, in the top part of the eye is the sky. Okay, but again, it's interesting. The interesting Rashi of Aliba de Rabbi Akiva. Okay, let's go back to the Gemara. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rava Baravua. Usmur Solach Pidjano Mesa. Okay. A halacha that we learned in the Braisa, which, as I commented earlier, is kind of a funny halacha, just strange, is that even after you redeem an animal, and we're talking about an animal that had Kedusha Saguf, and it had a blemish, so you were able to redeem it, even after you redeem it, it can affect a tamura. It can make a tamura, which so gives you the indication that Psula Hamukdashim is like quasi-carbon. It's hard to understand because you're eating it outside the base of Mikdash and you're eating it even in a state of Tuma. Okay, but it could still affect Tamura. What do you do with the Tamura? So, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rava Baravua, Tamura Tola Acher Pidjono Mesa. Tamura's got to die. Why? My time Hechliav, Likra Vemikol Chidush Duchoy Kaasya. So you can't offer it as a carbon because look at its source. The source animal, meaning Tamura is in exchange for its source animal. The source animals cannot be brought as a carbon. So that which I exchange it for sure cannot be brought as a carbon. Okay, so that's rule out that option. What about redeeming it? No. Lifrike lo alima lemitface pijona. The kedusha is not strong enough. Redemption requires real kedusha that does not have strong kedusha. Can't redeem it. Can't offer it as a carbon. Can't redeem it. Still has kedusha. That's it. You're stuck. Hilkach Mesa.
What about the principle that Torah cares for the money of the...
Yeah, the person shouldn't have made the... I understand that. The person shouldn't have made the Tamura. He should not have affected the Tamura. So I don't know if the Torah... It's not a kenas. It's just that in this case, the Torah is not so interested in saving a person's money when the person himself was the cause and the responsibility of this. So the Gemara says, how about this? What a good idea. Why not let it develop a mum and then eat it? Right? Again, look, this is a derivative. Well, let's go back to the source. Let's go back to the source. The source of where I exchanged the Kedusha from was Psula Hamukdashim, which means that I'm allowed to eat it. Now, I can only eat it with a blemish, but the blemish already happened. Fine. So I'll now go to the derivative. I'll go now to the exchanged animal. Make the same thing. Meaning, this animal only has Kedusha Psula Hamukdashim. All right, so with a blemish, let me eat it. V'chima bein zela tamuros b'chor ma'aser. Did not? And you think it's such a crazy idea? It's not. It's a Mishnah. The Mishnah in Tamura says, tamuros b'chor ma'aser, hein uvladan uvlad v'ladan ad sof kol ha'olam, harein ke b'chor u'ma'aser, v'yochlu b'mumman l'ba'alin. I have tamuros b'chor, I can eat it with a blemish. Okay, perfect. So Amalei Abai zeshem imo alav zeshem imo alav zekulo tamuros bechor meister mikre ma bechor meister bemuma mitachlan labalan af tamurasan mitachla. Look, the Gemara says you have to look at it in terms of shem imo, the name of its mother. Mother over here does not mean biological mother. Mother over here means look at the source. In the world of bechor, I can eat bechor with a blemish. So if I affect tamura, I can eat with a blemish. V'zeshim imo alav tamuros kachim mikre ma kachim lo mitchale ela bepijon af tamurasan nami lo mitchale ela bepijon. Here by psula hamukdashin, I'm only allowed to eat it after I redeem it. In other words, redemption is a necessary stage in order for me to be able to eat it. So here, It's a tamur, it's an exchange. I can only eat it if I redeem it. Here's the problem. You can't redeem it. It's not redeemable. V'halo alima lemitfas pijona. You simply do not have the ability to redeem it. And so therefore, there's no option. You just simply let it die. Tanya kavasi to Rav Nachman. The Gemara says the Braisa supports Rav Nachman. Minayin l'tamuras p'sula hamukdashin. I affect a tamura of an animal that was kadosh, balmum, redeemed, otherwise known as p'sula hamukdashin. I have an exchange for such an animal. What happens to the tamura? Mesa. So the Gemara says, and we learn it out from Parsha Shmini. The Torah says, Mimale Hagera. These are the things that you're not allowed to eat. Mimale Hagera. Things that, nevertheless, even though they chew their cud, you're not allowed to eat it. So the Gemara, it's a drasha. Meaning, and Rashi quotes over here. Where's the Rashi? Mimale Hagera Tame. Rashi, first long line. The Sefer Dekorah Ksiv Tamehu Lachem. There are those things that have signs of a kosher animal, and you're still not allowed to eat it. What's an example? It's a drasha. The Torah does not actually mention this by name, but this is darshan out from the Pesukim. So the Gemara says, Hami mesos. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Don't you know that we use this very drasha to teach me that I'm not allowed to eat the five chataos hamesos? There are five chataos that must be left to die. For example, a chataos where the owner died, a carbon chataos where Vlad chataos, Tmuras chataos, right? Five different chataos in schapru ba'ala ba'acheres. The owner lost it and got a replacement animal for it. Okay.
Does a horse chew its cud?
No, I don't think so.
Because those animals camel chews its cud, but it doesn't.
No, but what the Torah is referring to is that there's an animal that has both simani tahara, and you're still not allowed to eat it. Yeah.
No, why not just, to reduce the suffering, just do shechita and bury them?
Okay. If you shechted, the concern always is going to be that someone's going to eat it. In other words, So the Gemara says, no. That halacha is learned out from the pasuk, mimafrisei aparasa tame. Even though it chews its cud, it's going to be tame, meaning you're not allowed to eat it. That's for the chamesh chataos hamesos. And then tamehu lachem is coming to teach me the halacha of tamuras psule hamukdashim. Tainami achim minayin lachamesh chataos mesos tamalam mimafrisei aparasa tame. Chamesh chataos mesos hilchza gemirila. The Gemara says, what did you just do? You just learned out the five chataos hamesos from a pasuk? No, it's halacha Moshe Mesinai. Right? When we get to the mesechtos of tamura and me'ila, And a little bit Erechin. But tomorrow Me'ila, you're going to hear this time and again, that the halacha of Chamesh Chataos Mesos is really halacha Moshe Mesinai, which the Gemara says right over here. Hilchos HaGemiri La. Eleki Yasekra La Tomorrow's Asham. So the Gemara says, okay, maybe the Pasuk is coming to teach me about Tomorrow's Asham. Tomorrow's Asham, Nami Hilchos Ahi. That's also halacha Moshe Mesinai. Kol Shebechataos Mesos Ba'asham Roeh. That if by a chatas it needs to die, meaning like Vlad Chatas, like Tomorrow's Chatas, like all the other chatos that need to die. So if I have a parallel scenario by a carbon asham, I have to develop a blemish, and then I could redeem it with the blemish. So the Gemara says that by the chamesh chatos, it's a pasuk and it's halacha l'moshe Mesinai. Why do I need both? Because if all I had was a pasuk, the pasuk tells me don't eat it. Torah doesn't tell me what to do with it. I would have thought, okay, don't eat it. Let it develop a blemish. Then we'll redeem it. Kamash Malan, Hilchasa Lamisa. The Halacha Moshe Mesinai says that you have to let it die. The Ime Hilchasa Hava Amina Hecha Da'avar Ikre Va'achal Mehani Chamesh Chataos Isura Ika. If it was just Halacha Moshe Mesinai, I would have thought, okay, you're not allowed to eat it. But Lav Leka, but it's not a formal Lav. Kamash Malan di Ika Lav. The pasuk is coming to tell me that it's a formal Lav. And does the Gemara mean at this point in time, and you're going to get Malkus? I'm not sure. I don't know. I have a hard time imagining that you're going to get Malkus. The reason why I say that is because it's not beferish, it's not explicitly stated in the Torah that you're not allowed to eat chamesh chatos mesos. It's darshan from a pasuk. It's what we call generally a lav shebechlolos. I don't know if you're really going to get Malkus for eating it. Okay, I need to do more research. So the Gemara says another suggestion in terms of what we need the psukim for is to make a hekesh, that just like chamesh chatos have to be put to death, so too chemuras psule hamukdashim need to be put to death. Okay.
Both.
I mean, both are correct. Rav Huna is correct in that the fetus of Psule HaMukdashim needs to die, and Rav Sheshis is correct in terms of a solution, where if you want, right before your poder, you imbue the fetus with kedusha.
And then you can use it.
Yeah, and then you'd be able to use it as a karban.
So I would work
you. Because Rav Huna is talking about a scenario where you did it. Rav Huna just simply says it just comes out where you weren't. Okay, good. That is the first half of today's daf. The first half of today's daf is a summary and a conclusion of Psule HaMukdashin. Okay, we go back now to the topic of Bechor. Okay, remember the basic rule. If a non-Jew has a hand in the animal, it is exempt from Kedushas Bechor. So if you go into the simple scenario, is if you go into a partnership with a non-Jew, where you and him now have shares of an animal, and as we learned earlier in the Masechta, he doesn't even need a lot of shares in the animal. Even if he just owns the ear of the animal, that animal now is going to be exempt from Bechor. Now when I say, just keep this in mind, because it's really important to get through the rest of today's daf. When I say the animal is exempt from Bechor, I mean that if this animal was a female, and this animal gave birth, firstborn was a male animal, that firstborn male animal is exempt from Kedushas Bechor. So I'm really talking about not this animal per se, but the resulting offspring that comes out of this animal, the firstborn male that comes out of this animal. Okay, that's simple. That's easy. Now the Mishnah is going to get a little more complex, and it's going to talk about the following venture. Hamekabel son barzel min ha'oved kochavim. You're used to hearing the term son barzel. Where else do we hear the term son barzel? In Iksuva. In Iksuva, sometimes dad lays down some serious money as a dowry so that his daughter can get married. Let's say six perik of ksuvas. So the dad writes down a significant dowry for his daughter to get married, but that dowry that he gives his daughter, right, as much as he likes the son-in-law, but honestly, it's really for my daughter. So what they do is they write down that amount in the ksuva, and so the son-in-law gets the money, but he's on the hook. Meaning that upon death or divorce, she's going to get that money. He guarantees that money. It's called son barzel. It's a great term. It's iron sheep, right? That's in other words, he wants to go on any venture he wants with that money. God bless him, right? He wants to invest it in the casino. God bless him. Well, I don't know about God bless him, but but he wants to go gambling with that money. Okay, all right. Not the best son-in-law to have. But yeah, but whatever happens, he's responsible for that money. That's son barzel, okay? And
only if they get divorced, right?
And by the way, if he gains, in other words, if he profits from that money, he gets to keep the profit. Meaning, son barzel just simply means that the capital of that dowry is always hers. He's always on the hook for that capital.
If changes, he's not responsible for it. I mean, like if he goes gambling, as you said, and he loses the principal.
He's got to come up with that.
The principle stays the same.
Guaranteeing it.
He's got to work for the rest
okay.
of his life.
Now, that's generally speaking where we're used to hearing the term Tzoron Barzel. We are now going to talk about Tzoron Barzel outside the context of marriage. We're talking about it in a simple venture capital. And it works like this. Hamekabel Tzoron Barzel min ha'oved kochavim. The financial arrangement is really simple. A non-Jew comes over to you and says to you, look, here's my sheep. Take it. By the way, perfect parsha to discuss it.
Oh yeah,
perfect parsha, right? That's a love. That's exactly what Lavan does with Yaakov. Here, you'll take my sheep, okay? And you are going to be on the hook for all the sheep I give you. Okay? In other words, you are absolutely responsible and liable for the principal value of the capital that I'm giving you. The capital in this case happens to be sheep. Okay? If I give you 100 sheep, we're going to assess what the cost is of these 100 sheep. You owe me that. Okay? That's the starting point of the business venture. Okay. Now, any offspring that these sheep produce will go 50-50. Okay. The not a bad deal for the non-Jew. The Jew is taking a lot of risk over here.
But there's no can a Jew do this with another Jew?
And the answer is going to be no.
Because of their interest.
Correct. Very good. Excellent. And we say that definitively because the Gemara is going to quote a brisa that says that this is absolutely prohibited between Jew and Jew.
So in the case of Laban and Yaakov, Yaakov wasn't liable to any bechor.
Well, I don't know. I'll tell you the truth. I say it's a perfect parsha. I don't know if they made the stone Barzal arrangement.
Is that considered interest or
it is? Why not?
Okay, just wait. Quick, excellent question. Please wait.
Why wasn't it stone Barzal? All the sheep are.
He gave him the sheep. I don't know what Lavan said to Yaakov in terms of what he's responsible for. I'm not sure.
Correct.
Aseret monim. 10 times 10. Hamekabel tzoron barzal mina ove kochavim. Vlado sehem peturim. Vlade vlado sehem chayavim. The offspring or pater. Now, I told you this is going to be a little bit tricky. Just get comfortable with the language. When we say vlado sehem or pater, we mean, it says the offspring. It really means the offspring of the offspring. Why? Because it means that the non-Jew can come and collect as his for his capital, either the first generation or the second generation, right? And that means then that for second generation, let's talk second generation female, she now is owned, we'll use that terminology, she's owned by the non-Jew. Owned may not be the right word, but in other words, there's an encumbrance on that second generation towards the principle of the non-Jew. And so therefore the non-Jew has basically a hand in that second generation. So that means if she, second generation now, animal, sheep, gives birth to a firstborn, that firstborn is going to be exempt. Okay. Just get used to that language. But now you move on to the next generation. Already the non-Jew is out of the next generation. Now, but keep this in mind, though. In other words, the business venture was, the model was, that of the children that I produced, we'll split it half-half. For sure, the Mishnah is not talking about the half that actually goes to the non-Jew. That for sure is going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Bechorah. We're only talking about the half that's retained by the Jew. His animals that he gets to keep. But even of those, the Mishnah says, not the second generation, the third generation is going to be obligated in the mitzvah of Bechor. Only when you get to the third generation are you now totally removed from the non-Jew.
How is the non-Jew removed in the second generation? If it's the offspring and they're divided equally.
Because the assumption is that even the second generation is encumbered against the principal value.
As a guarantee.
And that's called Yad Ove Kochav. Meaning,
so that's an understood part of the contract?
Yes.
Only the second
yes.
Generation.
Yes.
So the Yosef doesn't get profit from the second generation?
Huh? No, he will. But because the second generation is encumbered against the capital, it's securing the capital.
It, right?
So therefore, it's as if the non-Jew actually has a hand on that second generation.
So is the deal, though, that he gets all, like, 10 generations down?
He'll get as however many animals are born. We'll split it 50-50.
So then he's kind of encumbered on the third and fourth and fifth generation. That's
an excellent point. Not only is that an excellent point, you are speaking to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. So it's good. So vlad vladosem chayav hamid vladosem tachad himosem vlad vlados peturim vlad vlade vlad vlados chayavim. If in the business model, the Jew says to the non-Jew, not only do I allow you to encumber the first generation against it, but I'm also going to allow you to encumber the second generation. I'm using the second generation to secure the capital. So then the second generation And even Vlade Vlados Peturim, right? Vlade Vlados Chayavim. So in other words, basically now you're just going to move down one more generation because the Jew said to the non-Jew, you're allowed to even move down one more generation in terms of a security towards the capital. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer Afil Adasara Peturim Shachrusim Ovi Kochavim. And right, Aaron, right on the money. Oh, I don't know about right on the money, but you're speaking to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Because every generation basically can potentially serve as security towards the loan, or security towards the capital, however you want to call it, right, Dan, we're going to talk about what to call it in just a moment. So as a result of that, every generation is considered, 10 generations later, is considered Yad Ove Kochavim, that the non-Jew has a hand in it. What Aaron's pointing out is that it doesn't matter how many generations you move down. There's a potential. The potential is that you promised that whatever happens from this point forward, you're securing the capital.
The capital is only the initial
you're supposed to replace it.
Right.
Right.
10 generations after,
Right. Rachel Shialdam in A's. Now, the Mishnah move quickly changes gears to a topic that we've heard already a number of times already. Wait. No, too early. Rachel Shialdam in A's, Ve'esh Yaldam in Rachel Peturim, and Abachor, Ve'im Yesh Ba'mix of Simanim Chayav, mutant children are exempt from the mitzvah of Bechor, but if there is some resemblance between offspring and mother, so then you're going to be chayav. This is a halach of nidme.
We've been nothing.
It just came in the same mishnah together, packaged together. Okay, correct. And a halacha that we've already seen. Okay, now lememra de kem de lo nakat mara zuze berushuse de mara kaima viriminu. The Gemara says what you see from the mishnah is that that capital is really viewed as the non-Jews, clearly. Because as long as the first generation, the second generation, all that's going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Bechor. Viriminu, the Gemara says, but here's the problem. Here's what I don't understand. And Ben alluded to this a little bit earlier, and that's the following. Bava Metzia, fifth perek, Ein Mekablin, Son Barzel, Meisrael, Memneshahu Ribis. You cannot set up this business model between Jew and Jew. You can't. It's interest. Because what is interest? Interest is very simple. Meaning, I lend you money. Good. I now know that you're on the hook for that capital, for that principal. Then on top of that, I say to you, oh, plus, I want you to pay me more. That's called interest. Anytime I have no risk. Now, with every loan, of course, there's risk. But if I have no risk of losing my capital, plus I'm adding more onto that, that's called interest. That's an interest payment. No. Principal is something else. It's totally something else. There are.
That's what it does. Basically, it keeps the principal intact.
Yeah, but keeping the principal intact is fine. We're talking about principal plus interest. Here, Tzon Barzel is principal plus interest. The principal is the sheep that I give you.
So is
plus any babies that are born, we're going to split half and half. But that's not, in other words, if it was just a regular business venture, you and I would be sharing the profit and the loss. That's a regular business venture. This is not a regular business venture because you're going to be on the hook for all the... No, principal just protects the principal. No, there's no interest. No. Principal is always going to be on an interest-free loan. Let's talk more about it after. Okay, so Ein Mekablin Tzon Barzel Meisrael Memneshahu Ribis. So it is ribis, it is interest. So you understand, first of all, you understand the basic point is that because I have no risk of loss on my investment, because I know all those sheep are either coming to me, back to me, either in the form of sheep or in the form of money, and on top of that, I'm getting more on top of that. So that's ribbit. So that's interest. So you cannot set up this business arrangement between Jew and Jew. That's point number one. But let's go deeper, one more level. And there's a second point to keep in mind as well. The fact that the Mishnah above Mitzvah is referring to this as interest. Do you know what that capital is called? That capital is called a loan.
Right.
Clearly. That capital is called a loan. Here now, the capital didn't come in the form of money. The capital came in the form of sheep. But who cares? The fact that the Mishnah Bav Metzia is referring to it as interest means that it's a loan. Okay. Now, whenever you borrow money, as a borrower, whose money is it? It's your money. Yes, you have an obligation to pay it back. But that's the whole point of borrowing money, is that right now the money becomes yours. You do with it what you want. The fact that the Mishnah Bav Metzia says you can't make this stone Barzal arrangement with another Jew, it's basically saying that that initial capital investment of sheep now belongs to the, what are we going to call him? I guess the borrower. It belongs to the borrower. Okay. That is diametrically opposed to what we're learning in our Mishnah. Because in our Mishnah, what we're saying is that that capital of sheep belongs to the non-Jew. It is going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Bechor. Its children are going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Bechor. Right? Basically, the question the Gemara is asking is, whose sheep is it? In this business venture of capital of investor and of I guess we'll call him borrower. Whose sheep? No, it's not a partnership. Because the investor is basically saying you're gonna return all the sheep to me. The only thing you're getting are just the vladim. You're just getting the fetuses, the offspring. So, from the Mishnah Bav Metzia, it seems clear, unequivocal, that it is a loan. As such,
but it's a temporary transfer of the asset.
Okay.
Well,
good. That's what a loan is.
But the thing is that this kind of also goes back to the Varsha Shlomo Alamo.
Okay.
Over there, we said that the non-Jew, since he was getting a share of something of the mother, then you can say that Varsha Shlomo doesn't apply.
So wait one second. Alma Bereshusa de Mekabel Kaima. Okay, good. So we have basically, it's seemingly a contradiction between our Mishnah in Becharos, which makes it sound like that while the capital is being transferred from the investor to the guardian, so it sounds like from our Mishnah, it still belongs to the investor. Certainly sounds that way. Otherwise, why are we talking about an exemption of Bechor? And meanwhile, the Mishnah Bav Metzia describes it as a loan, which means a loan is a total transfer. So Am Rabbi Lokasha had the Kabbalah Unza Vezula, had the Kabbalah Unza Vezula. So Rabbi gives an answer, and the Gemara is not going to like it. And the Gemara, but first let's understand what the answer is. Suggests Abaye that, well, the Mishnah Bav Metzia, the investor, right, the capitalist, is taking no risk. Meaning, basically, you're on the hook. That's a loan. That's a total transfer. Our Mishnah is describing where the non-Jew is prepared to take a hit on the capital. Meaning, you know what, if something happens to the capital, we'll partner up on the loss as well. In other words, huh? Yeah, so that's going to be one of the many questions that the Gemara is going to ask. So, Amalei Rava, Dekaba, La Unza, Vezula, Tzom Barzel, Karisle? So, number one, that's not Tzom Barzel. Iron sheep means iron sheep. The reason why we call something iron sheep is because I'm getting back the capital no matter what you do with it. So, that's question number one. Va'od Mai Pascha. And number two, why would the Mishnah speak in such generic terms, right? If, in other words, if we're saying so, it sounds like basically a repeat of question number one. If we're saying so in Barzel, doesn't that mean that regardless of what happens, the capital is going back to the owner? The Oda, the Tani Seifa, of Amikavim so in Barzel, and Ovi Kochav, and Lifluk, Vilisne, Bidida. In addition to that, so the Mishnah Bav Metzia makes a distinction between Jew to Jew versus Jew to non-Jew. You know, we can sharpen the chiluk. We can sharpen it. Why does the Mishnah Bav Metzia say like this? If you're setting up a Tzon Barzol business venture where you're not taking any of the loss, you're not prepared to take any loss, that's a loan, that's prohibited because you're charging interest. However, if you're prepared to take some of the loss, that's a business venture, that's not a loan, that's okay. Why does the Mishnah make such a sharper distinction? Where we could stay on topic between Jew and Jew and not have to move to a new topic of Jew and non-Jew. So Alama Rava, Yidavida de lo kabala ala unsevazula. So Rava says basically no. That's not what the Mishnah is talking about. The Mishnah, both Mishnayos, our Mishnah Becharis, and the Mishnah Mamasiyah, is talking about regular capital investment where I'm not prepared to take any loss. Here in the world of Bechor, do you know why you're exempt? Meaning, it is considered owner property. Let me start again. Who's the owner? Who's the owner of the sheep after the transfer's been made? It's a loan. The owner is going to be the Jew. The Jew's the owner. So why are you exempt from the mitzvah of Bechorah? So the Gemara says, because it's security. That sheep serves as security. If you're unable to pay back the investor with money, so he's going to come and take the sheep. The sheep serves as security. The Elo Mishkach Lala Behema Tafis Vlados Dida. And if he can't, and if the, and the sheep are no longer there, for whatever reason, he's going to go after the children. V'ahare Yad Ove Kochavim Be'emtsa. V'chol Yad Ove Kochavim Be'emtsa. Petura Mina Bechora. And here is it. In other words, we're going to say like this. The Mishnah Mamasi is absolutely correct. It's a loan. It was a total transfer. The sheep is not viewed property of the investor. The sheep is viewed as property now of the person who is charged with watching it and making this business grow. And it's a loan. And therefore, it's considered between Jew and Jew an interest, an issue of ribbis. An isser of ribbis. In terms of our Mishnah, same story. It belongs to the Jew. So then why are we exempt? Because it serves the security. Once it serves the security, it's considered as if a non-Jew has a hand in it, and that's enough to create an exemption of Bechor. Meaning basically what we're doing now is we're refining our understanding of what Yad Ove Kochavim means. We thought going into the discussion Yad Ove Kochavim means he actually has to have share in the animal. Now what we're saying is, no, not even sharing the animal. As even if the animal serves as security to a loan, that's considered enough, Yad Ove Kochavim. Correct. Okay, stop over here, we'll pick it up tomorrow.